The Mishnah. If someone sends gifts to his in-laws after Erusin, which was the minhag to do, if he sends 100 manais worth of gifts, even if he only eats a su'uda worth 1 mana at their house, it's as if he's now part of the family, basically. And he loses rights for the 100 mana if the marriage never goes through. However, if he never ate a su'udas chasen, he can get that 100 mana back. Gemara. What if the value of the gifts change? Who gets the extra value? Mara says, Teiku. Ravin said, if either one dies or he decides to divorce her, all gifts must go back to him except food and drink. That he's Michael. But if she wanted the divorce, then even the food goes back. The next Mishnah. A Shchiv Mera, a person who was on their deathbed, wrote up all of his karka to be given away. But he left a bit of property for himself. Even if he lives, the Matana stands. But if he gave up everything and he lives, the matana is not mekuyim, and he gets it back, since there's an umdana that he only gave it away because he thought he was dying. The Gemara. The Mishnah is like Reb Shimon, who looks for an umdana. An umdana is a mind frame, to determine what exactly a person had in mind before he made the transaction. Daf Kuf Mem Zayin. How do we know that a Shchiv Mera can give over a Matana without a Shtar? We know that if a person is on his deathbed and he gives over a gift, even though there is no particular Shtar and he just says those words, we say that the transaction is good after he's Nifta. Gemara answers, it's learned from either Vahavartem or Unesatem, which is in Bamidbar Chaf Zayin. The Gemara says three things Achi Teufel commanded to his sons. Number one, don't be involved in Machlekes. Number two, don't rebel against Malchus Bes David. And number three, if on Shavuos it's a clear day, it's a simen, you should plant wheat and you'll be matzliach. Rabbi Yitzchak said, at the end of the last day of Sukkos, everyone looks to see which way the wind is blowing. If it's a south wind, it's a simen there will be too much rain, and therefore the peiros will be priced low. But if there's a northern wind, it's a simen there won't be a lot of rain, so the peiros will be expensive. If the wind is westerly, everyone is happy, since the peiros are perfect and the price is fair for everyone. If the wind is easterly, everyone is sad, since it's a simen, there will be a drought. And finally, Shmuel is maida, that if someone gave a gift as a matnas shchiv mera, it's hard to be meichel on the gift. If a malva says to a leiva, the $100 you owe me, give it to Pliny, and he says it in the presence of all three people, the Malva, the Leiva, and the Makabel. The Kinyan to Pliny is good via a Din d'Rabbanan, a Hilchasa B'lay Taima, due to the Din of Maimid Shloshtan. If all three are standing there, then it's good. If someone makes a condition that when he sells a house, he gets to keep the attic, he can keep the attic. If a Shchiv Mera gives all of his property to one person, and he was Chayzer on a part of the property, he can be Chayzer on all of it as well, later if he wants to. Since the halach is chazara b'miktas, havi chazara b'kula. And finally, if a shchiv mera, if it's mafkir everything, and then he survives, teiku. What if a shchiv mera gives everything that he owns to tzedakah, and then he survives? Again, here we say teiku. However, the Shulchan Aruch in Chayshin Mishpat, Simen Reish Nun Sif Gimel, paskins in favor of the noisin, the one who gives the gift, allowing him to rescind his donation. This is basically consistent with the rule that we always say, Hamitzi mechavero olav haraya. The burden of proof is on the person who receives, i.e. the poor people have to prove that the gift was unconditional before they can take it away from the person who gave it. Therefore, since the person who gave it is considered the muchzak, he gets to keep it. Daf Kuf Mem Tes. If a shchiv mera leaves over a kol shehu of land, a little bit of land, what do we say in this halacha is considered a kol shehu? Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav says, land which is enough for the parnasa of the shchiv mera if he survives. Rabbi Yirmiyah says, even metaltalin would be good to be considered a kol shehu as well. And finally, if someone writes all of his property over to his eved, the eved goes free, since the eved is now part of this property. Daf Kuf Nun. A small amount of land, even a kol shehu, has chashivas, in that it creates a chiyuv of peah. It also causes one to bring bikurim, and it allows someone to write a prusbel. Finally, it can help a person make a kinyan agav as well. When it comes to dinei Torah, an eved is considered to be like karka. In Lashon B'nai Adam, he's considered to be Metaltalin. There are five cases when someone gives a gift, where there is a Nafkamina LaHalacha, if he gives away all of his property versus just part of his property. A Shchiv Mira, his Eved, his wife, his children, and a woman trying to protect her property. Daf Kufnun Aleph. If a person is makdish his nechassim, it comes to include all of his nechassim, including animals and tefillin. What about a sefer Torah? Teiku. A shchiv mira does not have to write a shtar, but just saying who he wants his property to go to is considered enough, because we say divrei shchiv mira ki ksuvim ukimisurim dami. If a shchiv mira gives away only a partial matana, and it's without a kinyan, it's no good. It's the equivalent to a gift from a healthy person, and it needs a kinyan. Other people disagree with this. If someone gives money to someone, and he then dies, you give the matnas shchiv mira, but if he says, give a get to my wife, or a shtar shichru to my avid, and he dies, we don't do it, since we say, ein get l'achar misa. Daf Kufnun Beis. If someone writes all of his property to someone, a matnas shchiv mira, and then he survives, the transaction is batal, since we know that the only reason he wrote the shtar was because he thought he would die. But if he doesn't die, then of course he doesn't want to give everything up. If someone writes a shtar shchiv mira, and he gives over the nechassim with an additional kinyan, and then he survives, in this case, he cannot be chayzer, since he made an additional kinyan. This additional kinyan now turns this entire transaction, this matnas shchiv mira, into a matnas bari, and therefore he can't change his mind. Daf Kufnun Gimel. If a shchiv mira writes, I'm giving you a gift in life and a gift in death, Rav says, this is a normal matnas shchiv mira, so if he survives, he can be chayzer. Shmuel says, no, it's a matnas bari, and it can be chal immediately. The halacha is like Rav, unless he writes mechayim, which would be mashmeh, it should be chal today. The Mishnah. If a shtar doesn't have the nusach of a healthy man, or the nusach of a shchiv mira, he says, he was a shchiv mira, and he got better, so therefore he wants to keep his property. The Makabel says it was written when the Nisan was healthy, so he can't be chayzer. Remeir says the Nisan must prove he was a shchiv mira, or he'll lose everything. The Chachamim say the Makabel must do the proving, since we say ha-maitzi mechavero alav haraya. The person who gave it is actually the muchzik, therefore the burden of proof is on the Makabel. Gemara. A valley during the summer months is called a rishus hayochid, vis-a-vis Shabbos. But by Sufik Tuma, we call this type of an area Erishus Harabim. And since Erishus Harabim is such a large area, we say Sufik Tuma Berishus Harabim is Lekula. We know that if there's a Sufik Tuma Berishus Hayachid, we're Machmer. If there's a Sufik Tuma Berishus Harabim, we're Mekel. This is learned from Saita. But in the winter, it's considered Erishus Hayachid even Le'inyan Tuma. So if a person cannot remember when he went into this piece of land, we go with a chazaka dahashta. If right now, when we're talking about this, it's winter time, we say that he must have gone in the winter. If when we're discussing this, it's the summertime, then we say he must have gone in the summer. Daf Kufnun Dalet. When we say ha-maitzi mechavero olav haraya, Rav Huna says, the raya must be with Edom. Rav Chizda says, the raya must be bekiyam shtar. There was a maisa in Bnei Brak where a son sold from the property of his father, and then he died. And the mishpacha said the sale is invalid, since he sold it before the age of 20. And we know before the age of 20, this type of a sale has no validity. In order to substantiate their claim, this mishpacha wanted to exhume the dead body and see whether or not his body exhibited the physical signs of maturity, shtei saras. They hope, therefore, to be able to see whether he was legally an adult when he sold it, or if he was in fact a child when he sold it. Rabbi Akiva, however, assert such an examination on the grounds that it would be nivul hames, disgraceful to the person who died. Kuntras al-Adaf here brings a story that it once occurred that a person was mistakenly buried with his wallet, which was later reported to have contained a lot of money. The Aruch Laner was asked whether his children, who were very poor, were allowed to open up their father's grave in order to retrieve his wallet, which is really their rightful Yerusha. The Aruch Laner, based on our Gemara, responded that they cannot. He proved from our Gemara that Yarshim are not allowed to open a grave merely for monetary considerations, just as Rabbi Akiva did not allow the heirs to examine the corpse despite the fact that it was necessary in order for them to ascertain whether or not his sale of the land from their estate was valid. the Chuvas Shivas Tzion discusses another case of exhuming a corpse. People once found an unidentified corpse in a field and buried it. Afterwards, an aguna, a woman whose husband was missing for a long time, claimed that her husband had certain identifiable body marks, simanim, and she wanted to have the grave open to inspect whether the body corpse was in fact her husband. The Stechemed and the Shivas Tzion and many other paiskim permitted exhuming the corpse in this case, even though opening a grave is considered disrespectful and disgraceful to the maize. They permitted it for the sake of an aguna, so that she can hopefully remarry and not have to wait indefinitely for her missing husband to return. Furthermore, he adds, opening the grave in such a case, albeit causing the body some disgrace, is to the deceased's own benefit and honor, because through identifying the corpse, his children will be able to properly mourn him and recite Kaddish in his merit. We have a chazaka that people don't write shtaris unless they're adults. A katan, who yarshins from his father, metaltalin he can turn around and sell it, even as a child. Land, however, is a machlokes if he must wait until the age of 18 or the age of 20 before he's allowed to sell it. What if someone doesn't have shtei saris? Till when do we consider him to be a katan? We say until the age of 36, which is over half of his life, since a person lives till 70. Once he's 36, then he becomes a gadol, even without shtei saris. And finally, if someone is still a katan, but they have good business judgment, it's possible that if they sell the land of their father, the sale would be valid. Daf Kufnin Vav. We have to be careful with a katan, since they get very attracted to even a small amount of money. So if someone offers a katan $10 for property worth $1,000, he might be tempted to accept it. Age 13 for a boy or age 12 for a girl is not enough to create a chalais of kiddushin and gerushin. You also need for them to bring shtei saris to prove maturity. The halacha is that within the 20th year of a boy, he cannot sell his father's land. But if he has business acumen, even if he's only age 13, he can't sell his father's land. The Mishnah. If someone who is either healthy or sick is giving out property verbally, Rebbe Elazar says, it must be done with some form of kinyan. If it's land, i.e. nechasim sheyesh la'an achrayis, it requires kesef, shtar, or chazaka. If it's metaltalin, nechasim she'en la'an achrayis, it needs meshicha. The Chachamim say, if someone is on his deathbed, that he can give out things even without a kinyan. This is called a mana shchimera, gemara. There was a maisa in Yerushalayim where they told a man that the only way he could transfer a gift of metaltalin is if he uses a kinyan. If someone leaves thorns in a vineyard, it can still be considered kilayim, since thorns are roi for animals. The Chachamim say, only something which is normally left for animals can become kilayim, and since thorns are not normally left for animals, they cannot be included in a group of peris or vegetables or whatever else grows on a field to be considered kilayim. Finally, if a matnas shchivmera wants to give a matana on Shabbos, we allow the kinyan to take place so we'll have peace of mind. Rabbi Levi says, even on Shabbos, one may affect this kinyan when acquiring something from a shchivmera. Aladaf brings the Rashbam, who explains that even though, in general, there is an isser midrabbanan to perform an act of kinyan on Shabbos, the Rabbanan permitted it in the case of shchivmera. The Rabbanim felt that not carrying out the desire of a seriously ill person who wants to convey his possessions to someone could unduly disturb his peace of mind and prove fatal to his health. The Hagos Ashri cites Rabbeinu Simcha, who applies Rabbi Levi's concept to a case of a dangerously ill person who requests to see his relatives. Rabbeinu Simcha says that if a sick person feels his condition worsening and asks to see his relatives, it's permitted to hire a guy to summon his relatives, since it is important for his peace of mind. Whether or not the relatives are permitted to travel on Shabbos to the sick is a mechlekes ha-paiskim. Some allow taking a train or riding a horse, because it's only an isser midrabbanan. This is brought in the Prima Gunim, Simen Shin Vav, Sivkatan Yudches. Others say that if the relatives live far away, one must wait until after Shabbos to travel. The Sefer She'arim Mitzuyanim Bahalocha, Chelik Beis Simen Tzadik Beis Sifkaten Zayin, he says that according to the Paiskim, who ask their relatives to travel on Shabbos, they would agree that if the relatives are not needed merely for the sick man's peace of mind, but also to attend to and supervise the sick man's care, then they're certainly permitted, and even mechuyev, to rush to his side by any means available. For example, if a goy was sent to bring the sick man medicine, a relative should accompany him to ensure that the goy doesn't delay and the medicine is properly and promptly administered. The Mishnah. Rabbi Yezer says the words of a Shchiv Meira only work on Shabbos, since he can't write on Shabbos. But if it's during the week, he must write down his wishes, otherwise the Matana is no good. Rabbi Yeshua says, if on Shabbos a Shchiv Meira can create a kinyan without doing a specific kinyan, but simply by saying the words, surely during the week, if all he does is say the words, it should of course be good. Daf Kuf Nun Zayin, the next Mishnah. If a house fell on Reuven and his father, and we don't know who died first, i.e., who yarshins, the yarshim of the father or the yarshim of Reuven, Beis Shammai says, yachloiku. Beis Hillel says, you leave it by whoever the muchzak is at that particular point in time. Gemara. It's a mitzvah for Yosemim to pay the chayvus of their father when they yarshin from his property. Udus al-Ladaf brings Taisvis, who says that only if the father gave over karka, which was mortgage for repayment of the loan, does Bezdin compel the orphans to repay the loan, but not if the father's estate contains only metaldolin. Taisvis brings a Gemara in Ksubis, Daf Tzadik Aleph Amud Beis, which indicates that although the Yosemim, who inherited only metaldolin, are not mechuyev by Bezdin to repay their father's debts, there was nevertheless a mitzvah for them to do so out of respect for their father. The Rajba, however, disagrees with Taisvis and holds that Beis Din requires the children to pay their father's debts not only with karka, but even with the metaltalan of his estate. Whether or not this mitzvah even requires children to use their own money or personal resources in order to pay off their father's debts is a matter of dispute amongst the Paiskim. The Rambam says that this mitzvah of repaying the outstanding debts applies solely to the money that they get through Yerusha. He's of the opinion that there is no obligation at all require them to use their personal money for this purpose. The Rajba, however, disagrees and says that not only are they mechuyev to use the recently acquired Yerusha for the purpose of repaying their father's loans, but they're even obligated to spend their own money for this purpose. The Rajba, however, draws a distinction. He says that when there's money available from the inheritance, then the children are compelled by Beis Din to repay the loan. If, however, they did not inherit enough money to cover their father's loans, the Rajba, while conceding that they are not mechuyev to repay the loans from their own money, holds that nevertheless they have a mitzvah to do so. The Hagos Ashri, in Ksubis Perek Tes, Simen Yud Aleph, also brought in the Rush, cites a dispute mentioned in the Gemara in Kedushin, Daf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, concerning the general mitzvah of Kibbud Av V'Em. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that the mitzvah requires a son even to spend his own money when necessary to honor his parents. This view appears to be consistent with the Rajba's position, requiring a son to spend his own money to protect the honor of his father by repaying his outstanding loans. The Halacha, however, follows Reb Nassim, who maintains that the mitzvah of Kibbud Av V'Em only requires children to spend time and effort for their parents' honor, but does not require them to spend their own money. Accordingly, the Hagos Ashri argues in support of the Rambam that if the orphans did not inherit anything from their father, the mitzvah of Kibbud Av V'Em does not require them to repay his debts with their own personal money. The Gemara says if a shtar chayiv is muktam, i.e. the date on the shtar is before the actual loan, the shtar is pasul. But if it's a shtar where the date is after the transaction, a shtar meucher, then it is good. Daf Kuf Nun Ches. If a house fell on a man and his wife, and we don't know who died first, i.e. so we don't know which yarshim get the land, Beis Shammai says, as he said before, mamen hamutl b'safek cholken. Beis Hillel says, we keep the property wherever the chazaka exists. The Mishnah. If a house falls on a man and his mother, everyone agrees yachloiku. Rabbi Akiva says, we keep it by the muchzak. The Gemara. Rabbi Ela, according to Rabbi Akiva, who speaks lafi Beis Hillel, says that the muchzak is the yarshe ha'em. Rabbi Zera says, the yarshe ha'bein are considered to be the muchzakim. When Rabbi Zera went up to Eretz Yisrael, he changed his mind and said he agrees with Rabbi Ela. Rabbi Zera says, the fact that I was chayzer proves that avira de Eretz Yisrael machkim. The heir of Eretz Yisrael makes people wise. I went to Eretz Yisrael, I became wiser, therefore I came to agree with Rabbi Ela. Kuntras al-Adaf brings the Anaf Yosef, brought in the Ein Yaakov in Ksubas, Dafayin Hei, as he understands this to mean that though the people of Bavel may be smarter than the people in Eretz Yisrael, the clean, crisp air of Eretz Yisrael enhances one's intelligence. In a similar vein, the Sefer HaBris writes that it's the mild Mediterranean climate of Eretz Yisrael which serves to brighten its inhabitants and improve their intellect. We know that as a general rule, when a halacha stated in the Talmud Yerushalmi is contradicted in the Talmud Bavli, most Paiskim follow the ruling of the Talmud Bavli. In light of our Gemara statement that Avira d'Eretz Yisrael Machkim, the Marik in Simen Pei Dalet wonders, why indeed does the halacha follow the Talmud Bavli if the sages in Eretz Yisrael had more wisdom, if Avira d'Eretz Yisrael Machkim? In answer to this question, the Marik cites the Rif in Erevin Daf Kuf Dalet Amid Beis, who explains that the reason the halacha follows the ruling of the Talmud Bavli is because the compilation of the Talmud Bavli was completed after the Talmud Yerushalmi. Thus, the assumption is that Rav Ashi, who compiled the Talmud Bavli, was well-versed in Talmud Yerushalmi as well, and if he elected to disagree with or ignore any halacha mentioned in Talmud Yerushalmi, it was because of a legitimate reason. The Marik says that it's for this reason that whenever a ruling of an earlier generation's Paisik is contradicted by a later generation's Paisik, the halacha generally follows the more recent psak. The assumption is that the later Paisik must have taken the earlier decision into consideration and carefully weighed all the evidence and proofs presented by the first Paisik before offering his dissenting opinion. Therefore, the halacha follows the later Paisik, since he was aware of the earlier decision and its proofs, whereas the earlier Paisik was obviously not aware of the later Paisik's proofs and reasons. The Marik, however, in Reish Simen Kuf, points out that while most Paiskim indeed generally follow the Talmud Bavli, the Rambam will often follow the Talmud Yerushalmi. The Marik says that whenever and wherever the Rambam deems the Talmud Bavli's interpretation of the Mishnah as forced, i.e. it does not conform well with the simple reading of the Mishnah, he will follow the Talmud Yerushalmi if its interpretation conforms better with the simple reading of the Mishnah. Daf Kuf Nun Tes. If Reuven knew Eidus for Shimon, and then he became a son-in-law by Shimon, now he can't be trusted to verify his own signature, but he'll need other people to verify the signature. And finally, just like a husband cannot yarshin his wife, Bekever, so too a son cannot yarshin from his mother, Bekever. This marks the end of this perek, and Yitzhak Shem on the next tape, we'll begin the final perek of Masechta Baba Basra. But at this point, we will conclude our shir.